everybody. Welcome back to the Paid Search Podcast, episode number 75. My name is Jason Rothman. As always, I'm joined by my pet gerbil.
Wow.
Christian.
I'm going downhill quick. Wow, pet gerbil. Thanks.
Sorry. Even wrote it down. That's what I do with my time.
In the shower. Like, what can I call him today? Oh, that's a...
What can I call him today? How's it going, buddy? We're back on the podcast. Another week has passed. I know you look forward to this. We record on Thursdays. Are you doing okay? I'm a little worried about you.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, I've been doing AdWords management for companies for a long time. And very few times have I hit points when I feel I don't think I can take any more work. And this week, I started feeling that way. Yesterday was a very busy day, but yesterday's over. Today is today. And I'm back to normal again. I'm feeling fresh and ready. I squatted 300 pounds today. So, you know, I'm good to go.
Well, good for you.
I threw Jason off. He wasn't ready for
that. No, I'm honestly, man, I'm off today. I'm a little, we've had some high highs this week. And I got to say, things are going very good. I'm very successful. And I wish I could share it with you, but I can't. So, Chris, I'm just curious. You're such a pro. You had things so down. You've been doing this so long. Why does Chris Schaefer get rattled? What's the flaw here? Is it new account builds? Is it client interaction? What's going on?
Builds. Yeah, new launches. Too many launches at once is intimidating. Definitely. For any manager, you know, you launch something and it's not over. You have to monitor it, make adjustments. There's always stuff to do, client expectations. So yeah, that's just how it goes.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. So Chris, we're going to start us off here today with a review, and I promise you it's very short. It's from Manzurul Hassan on iTunes. Love their work is his title, 5 stars. Love this AdWords podcasting. That's it.
All right.
Straight to the point, like Chris Schaefer dinner conversation. So,
didn't we read that one already? I thought we already read that, but no. Okay, well, thanks for the review.
Got another short one from Di Kaplan, 5-star review. My favorite is this title. Love this podcast. Always learn new little nuggets. Keep it up, hey, guys.
We should rename this the AdWords Nugget.
AdWords Nugget. Thank you guys for the reviews. Please review us on iTunes. When you do that, more people find out about the show and it helps us grow. So thank you so much. Now, Chris, today we're doing something very special. Mm. We're basically turning this show over to the listeners and we're answering questions. We have a Q&A. Chris, that stands for questions and answers.
Thank you. I was confused.
East Texas. And we're going to kick it off here with Melanie because we have a very special question from Meredith and
we're going to need
a few minutes to get into
Meredith
that
one. So, from
Chris,
down
why
under.
Don't you kick us off with Melanie?
Melanie. Okay. So Melanie sent in a question and thank you for your patience, Melanie, on waiting for an answer. But she had a question about ROAs, return on acquisition. Specifically, she was asking you, Jason, about ROAs and how they are very important. Can you guys talk more about this, ROAs, the topic of it in terms of strategy and how to set them up? So, Jason, she specifically called you out, so I'm going to pass this one to you. What about ROAs? How do you think about those when setting things up and as far as your overall strategy?
The thing listeners love about this podcast, Chris, is it's honest.
Yeah.
And I'm a very successful person and have a million things on my mind. I know a million things about AdWords, but there are maybe 3 million things inside of AdWords total. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot I don't deal with. So I don't know what ROA is.
She means like return on acquisition. You know, like I think what she's asking is how do you model a campaign so that you know that you're getting a positive return? You're not in the red on your campaign. So she's probably specifically talking about products. She's probably selling a product that has a monetary value for everything she sells and not necessarily just leads is what I'm assuming.
Well, if we're talking about like how you know if things are profitable, it's a very simple formula. It's just wildly simple. And as an accountant, I kind of take a little bit of an issue with the way everyone else talks about it. But we'll go through two things, Chris. So how do you know if your AdWords is profitable? You compare your cost, right? Or your cost per click. How many clicks does it take you to get a sale? Whether that's a product that you sell or a lead. And let's do product first because it's easier. Say your average cost per click is $1. Every 5 clicks you get a sale. Your cost per sale, cost per acquisition is $5. $1 per click, 5 clicks. $5 to get a sale. And then you just compare that to what is one sale worth for you. So if that keyword is tied to white tennis shoes and they sell for $20, then in terms of revenue, your return is 4-1. You got to put $5 into the system to get $20 out. And Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you get the sense that agencies and those kind of people, everyone in the AdWords world talks about the value of an acquisition in terms of revenue as opposed to actual profit of selling that product.
Right. Because when it comes to, you know, being involved on profit and revenue, one is investing in how the company makes profit and revenue versus, you know, one or the other. So there's a point when me as a manager, I have to, you know, say, well, this is as far as I can go. I don't know how your business works, and I don't know what your expenses are past this point. I can only take it to the point of actually selling it. I don't know how profitable it is beyond that, as far as, you know, employee expenses and rent and all that kind of stuff.
My only beef with that, and yes, that's the way most people do it, and I even refer to that to myself, because that's all we know about in our world. We only know what the revenue is. But what if the cost of getting that revenue wipes out the profit? Like, say the average profit on those white tennis shoes, when they sell them through their site, through a direct visitor, a free visitor, is $5. Their cost to sell that product is $15, and they make a profit of $5, and then they spend an additional $5 to get that sale, and it's like a wipeout. So my main message is people need to look deeper than revenue.
Well, Melanie, I'll tell you one thing that I hear a lot, and a lot of things I end up telling my clients about is basically this. There's a value in selling a product, but there's an indeterminate amount of value in having somebody purchase something on your site and becoming a customer, adding their email to your list, becoming part of your sales process for future sales, you know, returning customers. So
lifetime value.
Yeah, lifetime value is a factor. So you can't necessarily look at that in black and white. That's one thing. You may not necessarily be selling your tennis shoes for a large profit, but there is a value in establishing someone that can trust and buy shoes from your website. There's a lot of ways to do it, and it's so diverse, Jason. I don't think that we really have a clean way of saying this is the way it goes. It's different.
Well,
for
I mean, I have a method that I tell people, and we'll throw it back to services and leads, because that's the world we work in. What is your cost per lead in AdWords? How many clicks does it take you to get a lead? What's your cost per click? Say your cost per lead is $10. Say your cost per click's $1, takes you 10 clicks to get a lead, cost per lead $1. So that's your cost per conversion, cost per acquisition, cost per lead, all the same thing, $10. And how many leads does it take you to actually close a client and get new business, say for a divorce lawyer? Out of everyone that calls your office and spends a minute on the phone with you, what percent of those callers actually turn into clients that pay you for a full service? So say you close one out of every three. Well, then your cost per acquisition of a new client is three leads. Three $10 leads in AdWords on average is going to turn into one new client. So then your cost per lead is $30. How much do you make per each client? And that's how you determine if your service campaign is profitable. How much is one client worth to me? And that's made up of the direct revenue from that service plus the lifetime value, which you have to figure out yourself as a business owner. You compare that combination, lifetime value and the revenue on that first service, to the cost of getting that lead in AdWords, which is how many leads does it take to get one new client? Your cost per conversion times how many conversions it takes to get a new client. And Chris, to me, it's not that tough. Like, people really need to know this about their business, but not a lot of advertisers do.
I tell you what, you certainly have your accounting background, because, I mean, I'm a part of this podcast. I'm 50% of it, and I was like glazing over after that. But thank you, Jason, for that.
Well, Chris,
let's move on to the next one. I feel like we've done enough here.
Chris, does that make sense to you?
Yes,
I mean, do you think about these things?
Checkbox. Thank you, Melanie, for a good question. I understand what you're saying. I understand, and I agree.
This is the most important thing to add.
I do not want to talk about it anymore.
This is why it turns me on, Chris.
We're losing subscribers here. Let's move on.
But the subscribers that are staying are actually making money with their AdWords.
That's true.
This is the most important thing you can focus on, Chris.
Gabriel and Meredith both sent questions.
Are broke, probably. Sorry. If they're not asking about cost per acquisition.
They have similar questions, and I want to combine these two questions together. So I'll start with Gabriel. Okay. Gabriel sent in a question, and he said, is it better to have thousands of keywords or small amounts of keywords? Really good question. That's a kind of an open-ended question with not a whole lot of specifics. I want to tag along with Meredith's email. I appreciate, Jason and I got a lot of laughs out of your email. She mentioned cutoff jeans, and she's obviously in the in crowd here. She knows all the inside jokes. So, Meredith, we appreciate you sticking around for so long. But basically, Meredith works for an agency in Queensland, Australia. And she had a specific question because her boss says that he sometimes separates campaigns into exact match and broad match modifier, each with identical ad groups. Okay, so you essentially are doubling everything. If you have 15 ad groups in one, you're going to have another 15. And every one of those are going to have two or three ads. So you're multiplying the amount of work here immediately by doing this. Okay, then he ensures that the exact match keywords are added as negative keywords for the broad match side so that they don't cross over. So you don't get exact on one when it should be targeted on the other one. And she says, have you ever heard of this? Is it advisable? I'll tell you, Jason, this is why I love that we're both in on this podcast, because if it was just me, it would be my opinion and that's where it would be left. But I'm going to jump in on this. And Jason and I haven't really talked about it. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and say, I do not like this method for two reasons. Number one, just a basic Google best practices. If I actually just took my qualification test, my fundamentals exam.
81%? What'd you pass?
91. On? Give me a break. Okay. I mean, come on. 91%. So I took the exam. And one of the questions is very basic. It says, you know, how should you set up your campaigns? And, you know, assuming I got the correct answer, it was based on, you know, every campaign should have a service or product for each service or product that you have. So if you have four service and products, you should have different campaigns for each, because each of those would have different priorities and budgets and bids and different ROAs and stuff like that. Okay. So the idea for best practice is you set up one campaign for each service. Okay, so you're going against best practices by splitting these up, because you're having to do extra steps immediately by adding negative keywords. There's a lot of upkeep involved. So that leads me to my second point. The second reason I don't like this is because, Meredith, you're doing this day in and day out. You probably dread having to go and make changes to these campaigns on a day-to-day basis. And I would even put before the court on this that it's likely that you might even put less time into the campaign, because everybody only has a certain amount of time every day to manage these campaigns, whether it's your own campaign or you're managing it for someone else. Large, intense, complicated campaigns take a whole lot more time, because you have to do everything twice. You don't just add new exact keywords. You have to go in and add the negative side as well on the other one. You have to, exactly. If you're going to change bids on one, you got to change bids on the other. Budgets need to be duplicated on each one. I mean, there's so much more to do. Landing pages need to be changed. You know, double the work, add. Yeah. So the idea is you're doubling the amount of work. So I don't like it for that reason, because it makes it more intensive for the manager. Your boss says, this is what I like to do, but I bet you your boss isn't the one that's going in there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, checking on it every day and making adjustments based on, you know, the results. So that's my thoughts. What do you think, Jason?
Chris, I agree. For everyone listening and myself, I hate it. But for Meredith, I've told you this before, Chris, I love it for her personally. Because with a boss like that, she's never going to be out of work. If a guy's asking her to do all that redundant work that adds pretty much no benefit, he'll come up with a list of something to do. So Meredith, you're never going to be out of a job. That's the good news. The bad news is your job's going to suck. For all the reasons Chris went into, creating different ad groups for broad match modified and then exact, there's no benefit other than, for some reason, that makes someone who does that feel better about looking at that kind of account.
It looks more intimidating to someone checking it out.
Yeah, for them. Maybe they want to sell that complexity. We've talked about that before. Maybe they like having so much control like that. But in terms of AdWords management, the ability to manage campaign, and AdWords performance, it's not good for either of those. Because for management, Chris, you went into it, it makes things unmanageable. Because you're in month three. How do you know which ad groups to add keywords to? You have to double all the work. You're doing double ad testing. It's pointless. And then for AdWords performance, AdWords is getting away from this, Chris. They're constantly loosening the definition of an exact match keyword. Mm-hmm. They're telling us, make your campaigns more simple, because our machines are really good at reading simplicity and seeing patterns, and then they can make your performance better if they can understand the data. And all you're doing is jacking up the machines. Like, they have no clue what's going on. So in terms of performance and management, it's a negative. But of course, how you would bring that to your boss's attention, Chris, and if someone would be willing to change is a totally another topic. So
I think, Gabriel and Meredith, the question that we're answering here is that I think simpler is better. And that's the way I build my campaigns. I know Jason's been moving towards that more as well. I build my campaigns in ways that I like to manage them. I don't need 15,000 keywords if I can get by with 150. You know, it makes it easier to manage. And in the end, like Jason said, it's...
You may not need 150 if you can get by with 35.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'm doing some significant campaigns in one kind of a specific niche of an industry, and there's just not many ways you can search for this kind of service. So yeah, Chris, you mentioned it. I am getting more away from SCAG. We'll talk about that later. And I am seeing the value managing some big campaigns, of setting up your campaigns with extreme simplicity, because it makes your management better and you can achieve better performance. So I don't think you need 1,000 keywords. I think, Chris, we should just throw this out there. The reason why a lot of people in this field think you do and think you need 1,000 long tail keywords is because SEO. SEO focuses on long tail keywords, but SEO doesn't have something called phrase match. You can't rank for the keyword credit card phrase match and then show up on the long tail keyword that gets 10 searches a year. You have to show up on that specific one. But with AdWords, you can target phrase match and pretty much show up on any kind of long tail search you want to just with one phrase match keyword. So the big thing to know is SEO and AdWords are completely different.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Keep it simple with AdWords, and the word long tail should really never be used in an AdWords campaign.
Yeah. If I use that phrase, I usually say longer tail, because it's implying, you know, something beyond just a couple words.
I say lower volume.
Lower volume. Okay.
I say, yeah, I like that too. We're targeting this word, but the reason we didn't build out your campaign with 1,000 keywords is because we don't know what those keywords are yet.
Yeah.
So let's have our phrase match, maybe our broad match modified, and we'll show up on the lower volume searches whenever people search for them, and we'll find out what they are.
Yeah. All right. So I'll take this next one. I listened to the voicemail, and this is from Katie. She sent us a voicemail, and I had to listen to it a couple times because it's a bit confusing. So I'll take this one, and Jason, you can jump in. But basically, she's asking, and I think we've addressed this before, but it's a confusing topic, and I want to be clear about how this works. And she wants to know if she bids 1 cent above another competitor's bids, and she has a bid limiter rule on her campaign, will she still be able to show above them if they outbid her by 1 cent, you know, above that or 5 cents above that? She's wondering how that affects her ranking. And Jason, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this, but I can state it very simply. Never confuse your ranking, your position of your ads, with your bids.
Great point.
This is something that a lot of people misunderstand, because there's an equation involved. You're only bidding on, actually it's less than 50% of the equation now, honestly. We don't know how much of the equation is made up of the other two, but it used to be 50-50. Bid times quality score equals your ad rank, which determines your position ranking. Now it's actually quality score times your bid times your ad extensions.
Use of ad extensions, yeah.
The type of ad and the ad extensions that you have, that determines your ad rank. So it's not even 50%. Let's say maybe it's 40% now. You know, the other is an additional 10 or 20%. So don't get caught up on how much you're bidding. You know, do I need to bid 1 cent more to get to be able to rank higher than this one competitor? The fact is, if you want to worry about ranking higher, worry about your quality score and how much you're bidding. Raise those and you'll always be higher.
And the whole premise of the question, Chris, how would you know what 1 cent above your competitors is? The only information you have on that is you break into their office at night and hack their computer and commit felony. No, just kidding. The only information you have on that, Chris, is the columns that AdWords throws in there at the keyword level. What is it? Top of page bid for each keyword, first page bid, first position bid. But you and me know those aren't usually accurate.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not accurate to a penny. So I always tell people, Chris, focus on yourself. Focus on getting a bid that's going to put you in the game at the top of the page, top 3-4 positions, and then really go to town with ads and keyword selection and negative keywords and all that, and try to get a 3-4% click-through rate.
Yeah, I have, you know, a lot of people that I work with, and it's amazing how many times I hear, I don't want to be first. I always want to be first. I want to be third. I want to be second. I want to be 2.5 as my average position. I hear all these requests, and it's so funny that people get hung up on their positioning. It's not really about being in a certain spot. It's about determining which keywords show up in
certain positions.
It's about
our first question of the day, return on your spend. How profitable is your campaign?
Exactly.
And sometimes you want to show up in position one and get the most traffic possible because your campaign's insanely profitable. And then sometimes you're in a competitive market and you need to show up number 5. Because people bid up keywords so much and you need to have a super low cost per click. So focus on your profitability. And then, Chris, it's tough because people see AdWords and that's some of the only data they get, or they see the Google search results. So they get so hung up on the positions and seeing themselves there. But to be a good AdWords manager, you've got to get beyond what you can just see for your own individual results. And that's a huge issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Jason, you gonna take another one?
Yes. You know, I love to read them, Chris. I don't summarize good. I just read. So,
okay, go for it.
We got a question from Sarah. Sarah, thank you so much for writing in. She said, I manage a campaign for oral surgeons who specialize in dental implants. Sarah, I do that as well. My current search terms report consists of a lot of inquiries about how much dental implants cost. I've seen that out there as well. I'm trying to decide whether this is quality traffic or whether I should add cost as a negative keyword. So Chris, I'll just briefly jump in there. As a default, you probably do this too. I add the word price, cost, fee, rate as negative keywords to my accounts.
Interesting.
A lot of the times. And so it kind of depends, Sarah, one, on track your conversions. And maybe you don't need to have conversion tracking of a minute phone call. Maybe you should really bump it up to like 5 or 6 minutes to really see if the keywords are bringing in long quality calls. And if someone searches dental implants cost and they stay on the phone for 6 minutes or something, because maybe your client is really good at intake and can convince the person that their cost is a good cost and then turn them into a patient, then it's worth showing up on. But you can figure that out by having really strict, really high kind of, in terms of duration, phone call conversion tracking. You want long phone calls. And then the other thing is, how big is your budget? Could you spend all your budget on searches like dental implant dentist in Houston, dental implants near me, and those higher quality, deeper in the funnel searches? If you can't spend your full budget on all that, then I'd say throw cost as a negative keyword. But if you have basically an unlimited budget and you're struggling to spend your full budget, continue to advertise on it, but maybe make your conversion threshold super strict and really figure out if those searches are leading to long calls. What do you think, Chris?
Ladies and gentlemen, that was an excellent answer. That was way better than I was thinking. I love the idea of increasing your phone call minimum in order to determine, are these really worth the value? Because you raise the threshold. I love that. That's great.
And here, I'll go one further for you, Chris. Maybe, Sarah, add cost, and you can take a page from Meredith's boss and make a second campaign.
Oh, boy.
Add cost as a negative, right, to your first campaign. Run a second campaign only targeting exact match or phrase match cost words. And in only that campaign, apply the longer call conversion. You can drill it down that way without sacrificing a more lenient conversion metric overall. Yeah. Like, you can still use a shorter conversion for everything else, but for these ones, you're trying to drill down if they're working or not, have the longer conversion only apply to that campaign.
That's good stuff. I don't really have anything to answer there. I don't particularly block cost. I do block things like cheap or discount, you know, Craigslist, eBay, things, stuff like that. People looking for deals.
Yeah, but as much as you and I have in common, Chris, we have differences.
Yeah.
Because you're working with B2B. It's hard to get a lead. Sometimes months can go by for some of these really high money, big company transactions, and they need all the leads they can get. And people really do search costs, and it turns into a lead.
A lot of times businesses will need, you know, three estimates for them to make a decision on who they're
B2B.
So they're looking, literally, they're just looking for two more people to get a quote from, you know?
Right. And for me, if I'm working with a divorce lawyer or a mover and someone's searching cost or price in the search, it's just not the kind of moving client or divorce client my clients want to work with, because people that search for that for moves and divorce lawyers, they're really looking for the cheapest option possible. And my clients don't usually offer that.
Yeah. All right, so I'll take the next one. This next one is from Vlad. Vlad sent a question over to us just recently. This is October 6th, and said, "Hey there, guys. Just discovered your channel and happy to dig in with AdWords with insiders like you." Hey, Vlad, thanks. Appreciate it. He said, "I was looking for more information about CPA based on machine learning, and I'd like to know, in your opinion, if it's better to start a new campaign using these bid strategies or start with enhanced CPC and switch to a CPA after having some results with it."
And he's probably talking about CPA bidding.
Yeah. So layman, I mean, that was a whole lot of complicated language there. So any newbies that are listening in, that was probably like, whoa, what did you just say? So basically what Vlad is asking is no offense to the newbies.
No, I'm just thinking the newbies after a question like that, the newbies are just, they're going to Facebook, yeah, Chris.
Immediately.
Just tell me what my reach is, okay? How much should I reach
today? How many people did I reach? Please, guys. This is too hard. Okay, so basically,
that's a Facebook crowd.
Yeah.
Right,
so Vlad,
what's my reach?
So Vlad is basically asking, what type of bidding strategy should he do, especially for new campaigns? Should he start with something that's based on a cost per acquisition?
Right.
That's a familiar term, right? We just talked about that. Or should he base it on manual with enhanced bidding that allows both computer and human manipulation on the bids, and then maybe change to cost per acquisition later? So, Jason, I know you recently talked about cost per acquisition.
I've been burned, bro.
Because you said you were going to try it. So this is an excellent opportunity. Yeah. Have you tried it? What did you find with cost per acquisition bidding?
So just a little background. I had been managing with another company. I was kind of like, this is years ago. I was kind of the day-to-day person on the campaign. And this was a massive campaign, Chris, both in terms of money and in terms of keywords. They even did a bunch of display advertising. They did cost per acquisition bidding, target CPA bidding, and it worked really, really good. So seeing that experience has always kind of made me have an itch for it. Like, I want to try it out. But my campaigns tend to not have that many keywords and that much data, but Google's always pushing this, like in your notifications. Yeah. So I tried it out recently on some campaigns that, you know, it's one or two campaigns in the account. We spend $1,500 to $3,000 a month. Maybe we get like 30 to 50 conversions a month, but they've been running for a couple of years and have a ton of history. It started off awesome, Chris. Like, I turned on a target CPA. I also tried maximum conversion bidding to get the most conversions possible. And for the first month, things went awesome. And then it just kind of like stopped being awesome. And here's the problem. When it stops being awesome,
what do you do about it?
Because my mindset is make changes, fix it. Because that's what we do.
Lower bids, increase bids, you know, change mobile device settings. Yeah, I mean, all kinds of stuff.
And the more I do that, the more the results get worse, because then the CPA bidding thing has to relearn the system.
Right.
And I don't know how much it's learned, and I don't know what changes we made that are turning it off. And I ended up hating it, Chris. What I do is I do manual bidding. I'm so used to it. It's so much control. I always turn on enhanced CPC bidding, where they can bid up by 30 or down by 30% if they think it's likely a conversion person. I do manual with enhanced CPC. The only time I would probably try the machine learning bidding is if it's a massive campaign, Chris. And I mean massive.
It can gather data really quickly. Lots of samples. Gather
a ton of data, but I would never start off with that, Vlad.
Yeah, that was a specific question, is should he start off with CPA bidding or manual? And I think we're both drawing a conclusion, Vlad, that do not start off with CPA bidding, because we're talking about machine learning, and at least refine things like your negative keywords, you know, your targeting, you know, little things like that that you can do that are outside of bidding. And then once you feel like you've hit, you know, what you can on your own, then the simplest stuff would be maybe do an experiment with 50% manual bidding, 50% CPA, see how that goes, set up a new experiment, which you can do. The other option would be to swap it over and see how it does fully on its own. But I definitely say don't start off CPA.
I would preach patience if you're going to do it and you go through 2 weeks in a row with a super bad cost per conversion. Let it do its thing and see if it can fix itself, if it starts messing up. And the other thing, Chris, is I think you and I might just be maybe the wrong people to ask, because when we build out accounts, they're already 90% of the way there in terms of the way they're going to perform. We know what they're doing. We manage them for a couple months. They're at 99%. Our search terms are basically perfect. And so maybe machine learning bidding doesn't do that much for us because we get it so close to as perfect as possible. But maybe someone who really has an awful campaign, they throw on that CPA bidding, the machine bidding, and maybe it just really dramatically makes differences.
It bridges that gap for them. Yeah. That's
so,
a good point. That's possible.
I think we may be the wrong person to ask, because I haven't had a great experience with it.
Yeah, I mean, you are asking two guys that do this full-time all the time, and we don't like to give permission away to Google to do stuff for us. We like to do it, and we like to have control, because we're the ones that are going to get griped at if the metrics aren't met month to month. So that's why I don't like to give it away. But anyway, so we'll take the last question here. Jason, you want to answer a question from Rob Sanders?
All right, Rob, don't hold me to this. I'd let you sleep in my house, bro. Like, and I say that, but I don't really know you. So if you show up and you're like, you know, you're looking like you traveled 4,000 miles across country to go to a house in Florida and with a 6-pack of beer, and you think I'm 13, like, Rob, I don't know you, you know, but I feel like I know you, because he's one of our longest time listeners, Chris. And so, yeah. Rob, if you showed up, I'd consider letting you sleep in my house. So you're never going to be homeless fully. I'll consider it, but I reserve the right to turn you down if you're a creep, because, you know, meeting people in real life is a little bit different here. All that
this
said,
comes from a guy I've known for like 2.5 years or something, and have yet to see him in person. So, Rob,
Chris, I'll put you up in a motel. Yeah, like, you're not going homeless either, buddy. But I'm going to take care of you.
Right.
One night in a motel. Right. But Rob Sanders asks, when putting together a campaign with a potential limited budget, what is your thought process refining to achieve maximum results? So Rob asked, How do you do AdWords good? No, just kidding. So what Rob's asking is, when you're dealing with a limited budget, what are some things you can do to achieve the maximum results? What comes to my mind, Chris, is that's what we do. Like everything we talk about on this podcast, that's what we do, because most times we have a limited budget. But a few things that come to mind, Rob, is just go small. Go small in everything that you do. So like your location, if it's a moving company in Chicago, and we were just dealing with this up there, Chris, and you only have $1,000 a month and you can spend potentially like $10,000, $11,000 a day, only target like maybe a 5-mile radius or an 8-mile radius or 10-mile radius around your area of your city. See what you get. Go small with your location. Go small with your schedule. Don't advertise after hours if your main conversion is phone calls. Try to spend all your budget during the time when you can take phone calls. And then with your keywords, don't get too crazy with keywords. Like, so if you're doing dental implants, we talked about earlier, or moving companies or divorce lawyer clients, don't have keywords in there like divorce lawyer cost or divorce lawyer payment plan, which is a search I saw the other day. Have things like only divorce lawyer near me, divorce lawyer Houston.
Plus geo,
Go really deep and really small and make the most of that budget.
In my mind, I think you're exactly right, Jason. I mean, if I'm going to have to cut corners in order to make this work, I'm going to cut corners where I know things are going to work better. And one thing I don't do, if I don't have budget, if you interpret that, what you're basically saying is I don't have the money to be very competitive on high cost keywords. So what that means for me is I may not have any exact terms at all. I might have some modified.
Oh, brazen. That is brazen.
Yeah, I might have.
But I see where you're going.
A couple phrase match, but I might have a whole lot of modified broad because I need to make sure that the quality of traffic is good. But I need my net to be big enough that I can still catch stuff. Because if there's certain types of searches that I want to catch, but I can't afford to pay $6 or $7 for a click, I need to catch the alternate ones that are kind of reworded a little different or kind of strange, you know, but they're still quality clicks. And that's what I might go after. That, as far as keywords, you know, that's usually a strategy I go with.
That's a great strategy. So you're going small with your schedule, all that kind of stuff, location, but you're casting a wider net with what you can show up on to try to get a smaller cost per click, but
still making
limiting
sure.
that net
with
a broad modifiers. I like that. So you may not show up on the search divorce lawyer Houston, Texas, but you might show up because a broad match on I need a lawyer for my divorce, South Houston, and just there's less people that are going to be in that auction.
Obviously, to avoid having to have, 1,000 keywords, modified broad match is the way to go on that, because you can have, 50 of those and catch a lot of those kind of things. You don't want to have, best Houston divorce lawyer, in all the different variations of that, but you could have, plus Houston, plus divorce, plus lawyer. And you'd be able to catch things like that for possibly cheaper.
I love it.
Yeah.
Chris, can I throw a nugget out there?
Okay, nugget. That's what we're about. I believe we started this podcast about nuggets.
I learn something every week about Google AdWords, Chris, and I try to learn something every day. And I want to share something I learned, and it's a great term that is alliteration, which the only way to have success or sell a product in life is alliteration. I'm telling you, Chris.
Okay.
Like, it just works. The ramp up is real. The ramp up is real. You've been there. I've been there. You get a client all hot and bothered. They're ready to start advertising AdWords. Maybe you're working with an agency and they're getting their clients hot and bothered. You spend a week building out the campaign. Everybody's ready to go at Monday morning at 8 a.m. You turn it on. Crickets.
Yeah.
Nothing. You're showing up in the preview tool. Everything's approved. You're bidding super high bids. And you know you should be getting a ton of traffic, but it's trickling in. And you call in Google, they can't give you an answer that makes sense. You can't give your client an answer that makes sense. And there's a lot of pressure, Chris. Well, I've been told this by multiple people at Google. And you really kind of have to pry with them and tell them like, hey, I'm not a crazy person. Like, I know a ton about AdWords. Just tell me that. And I'm not asking you to explain why my campaign starting off is such a dud. I know I'm doing everything right. And I'm not asking for an explanation. Just kind of like wink at me and tell me, the system is kind of like ramping up and it takes a few hours to get going. And they'll say, yeah, you're right. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's not like a light switch. People think turning on a brand new campaign and account, Chris, is like a light switch because that's what you do in the account. You turn it on and you think, okay, I'm running. It's not like that. Whatever happens behind the scenes, when you go from zero quality score history, zero click-through rate history to try to advertise on an auction, there's something that happens, Chris, that I can't even explain, but the results you get in the first couple hours, maybe the first couple days, I was told, is not the way it's going to be in week 2 and 3, month 4, 5, and 6, year 2, year 6. The ramp up is real. And they told me the first 1 to 2 days, and then even the first 4 to 5 days, really. But what I've experienced is especially that first half of the first day, the ramp up is real. And you can't take anything that you see in your account with like much credibility, because things are going to change and improve later in the day and the next day and the day after that. The ramp up is real. What do you think about that, Chris?
I like it. I think that is something that you would not be able to see unless you'd been in the game and had experienced it over and over again. And I think you're absolutely right. It made me realize, in the back of my head, I'm thinking about this one client I recently got, and I'm just not getting impressions and clicks, and I'm kind of freaking out. I'm like, this is a high click, high spin.
Well,
type
then why
of thing.
I'm not? You can Skype me, Chris. Like you can. Why don't you call me?
Well, you know.
Do we have to wait till Thursday?
I've gotten stuff to do, you know.
You can't take advice from me.
Just text
you?
Me. Text me.
I'll see you on Thursdays. Yeah. Chris, but doesn't that make sense? Like
it does.
Now is it kind of clicking? The ramp up is real, and everyone needs to calm down and get a hobby for the first half of the first day especially.
Yeah, don't sit on your AdWords. I think that's a good point to sign out on. I like that.
I just like throwing out nuggets, and I like throwing them out at the end of the show because these are the real people.
Yeah.
And you know what, Chris? The water cooler people, those are the real people. And I'm going to start throwing off my best nuggets like in the middle of random water cooler shows. Because I know some people don't listen to them because they're like, I just want the AdWords tips.
That's the worst strategy. I'm going to make everyone suffer through 40 minutes of a podcast before I give them the good stuff. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No, I don't think so, Chris, because I have a lot of love for the true fans of the show.
Okay.
And that tip is extremely valuable, is it not?
Okay.
Like, that tip is something you're not going to read in a book.
Okay.
And your boss isn't going to tell you. So I like to share with them. So, Chris, I'm going to take us out here. It's been another pleasurable experience doing a podcast with you. We thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next Monday with episode number 76 of the Paid Search Podcast. And I think, Chris, we might be talking to Walt. So we'll leave everyone in hot anticipation. And we'll see you guys next time.